Welcome back to another episode of the Hoops Temple podcast. Y'all know me, Nathan Schwartz. Joining me from New Zealand, Dylan Williamson.
Hello, Nathan.
How's it going?
I'm finally good. I can finally honestly say that I'm good again.
Good, good, good.
Yep. COVID had me feeling rougher than Jason Tatum being guarded by PJ Tucker.
Well, at least you're not taking fines as frequently as the Mavs bench.
Hey, do you see... Hoop Social is now basically worldwide famous after Tim Hardaway Jr. shared a Hoop Social meme.
Yeah, our boy Jordan's making it big.
Yeah.
Also, if you're not checking out Assisted Development right now to get your draft updates, you gotta check them out. They're on our sister her feed. They're also all together on the Hoop Social Network her feed. So come check us, them, Charity Stripe Commentary out. We got a good show for you today. We're pretty much just talking conference finals teams, where they're at now, where their future's going, what's this going to mean for them. So, hope you enjoy the show. So, what's been your takeaway of the conference finals so far? You enjoying them?
I haven't really liked like any of the East series, just like watching them. Like I find that's when I'm most bored is like basically all of the East, even in like the last round. I'm like, this is kind of boring. The West ones are pretty fun though.
I feel like the East keeps having these injuries and players keep missing time in a way that would make me think that they were going to lose. Like I saw the notice that Jimmy Butler was out. I wasn't watching the game live. I was planning to watch it the next day, which I did. But I saw the notice that Butler was out and Miami had this huge lead. And I was like, oh, I kind of wonder if Boston will come back. And they didn't. They made a good run, but not enough.
Are they playing today?
Yes, they are.
Yeah. Must have been like an hour or so.
Yep.
Yeah. That'll be interesting.
Butler is going to play, although Hero is out.
Oh, yeah. No, that's right then. If Butler wasn't going to play, then it would have been interesting.
I don't know. I feel like Butler is definitely the better of the two, but he has a semi more replaceable skill set of let me just pound and drive into people. Like Victor Oladipo has been doing that fairly well.
Exactly, yeah. Victor Oladipo, who played 0 minutes in the first half and then all but 4 minutes in the second half. In the last game, did like a really good Jimmy Butler impression, but he still can't shoot. Like he's like... You know, like he became a terrible player and he's slowly getting like all of his skills back, but he hasn't quite remembered how to shoot yet.
He's got it on defense, which is kind of all he needs at this point as a low level player. I kind of wonder what he's going to get in the offseason. And I can't imagine he'll stick around Miami.
I don't know. Isn't that sort of like the whole point of them, you know, just letting him rehab on their roster and paying him to basically do nothing? Is like you get better and then you can join the team.
I just think he might have outperformed what they're willing to pay him next season.
Mm, yeah, maybe.
Because right now he's on a vet minimum deal, or close to it, 2.3 mil. Yeah. I feel like at least someone will want to give him that partial MLE or something.
Yeah, maybe like the taxpayer mid-level, which is like 6 million.
Yeah.
They can give him the Reggie Jackson contract, which is what the Clippers did, where they brought in Reggie Jackson halfway through the season, then didn't have any money to pay him, so he stuck around for one more season. And then once you've got 2 years on the team, you get early bird rights, and then they can pay you the average player salary, which is like it's close to like the full mid level, so it's like 10-11 million or something. And that's the Reggie Jackson contract. So they could, by having him on their contract with early bird rights, give him up to the average player salary, which is a pretty cool rule.
One of these years, I really have to study the cap, like just print it out and say, all right, this is going to be long and dull, but I'm going to read every part of this.
Yeah, that's what I'm here for, Nate.
Were you a fan back when Devin George used his no trade clause to blow up a massive trade?
I've never even heard of Devin George.
Exactly. He had a no trade clause due to being signed by a bird exemption.
Yeah. Yeah, same as like why the Lakers couldn't trade any of their guys, because if you sign a guy to a 1 year deal off of using Bird, then they have an implicit no trade, because if they get traded, they would lose their Bird rights. Same as like giving a guy a player option on a minimum, it basically gives them a no trade, because he getting traded to another team would lose his bird rights, so they get the right to block any trade.
Oh man, I'm pulling up the trade now, and it was Dallas's attempt to trade for Jason Kidd that they had to completely rework the deal, or not completely. Looks like a lot of the principles still went through, but George blocked it for just a quick moment, so they had to tweak things. Let me see here. Oh, so they had to re-sign Keith Van Horn, who had been semi-retired for two seasons.
Yeah.
And that's how they got... God, the cap is just wild.
It's like a little bit reminiscent of the original Chris Paul trade, where obviously that eventually gets blown up, but then it's like, oh shit, we just told all these guys that they're getting traded.
Yeah.
And from the Lakers' side, then Lamar Odom's like, oh, fuck you guys, if you want to trade me, then you can trade me. And really, like, affected like negatively the Lakers and Lamar's.
Oh, Lamar was never the same after that.
Yeah.
100%. That completely derails Lamar's just remainder of his career, that and marrying into the Kardashians. I don't know which was actually worse. It goes downhill fast.
Mm. Where did they eventually trade him? Was it actually to Dallas?
It was to Dallas.
Yeah.
And I pulled up the numbers here. Lamar dropped from averaging 14.4 points per game to 6.6. His field goal percentage drops from 53% to 35%.
Wow. That's basically as big of a drop-off as you can have.
I know. But hopefully Dallas will do some better moves this offseason.
I mean, they're about to be swept out of the Western Conference Finals, so I hope they've got some moves up their sleeve.
You know, I hate the fact that this is going to be a sweep. Hmm. I wish the fact that we more regularly publicized, like, how much did a team lose by?
Exactly.
Like, what was the point differential at the end?
Yeah.
Because, like, these are four competitive games. Like, the Boston-Brooklyn series from the first round were pretty competitive games at different points.
Yeah. Or even this Boston-Miami series. Like, Boston has won a majority of the, like, individual quarters in this series.
Yeah.
But, you know, if Miami won tonight, then it's basically all over.
Yeah.
And you don't see that they've won, you know, all but two quarters in the series.
Yeah. But... you know, that's how it happens, and Dallas is not recovering from this. As good as Kidd was at making adjustments against Phoenix, and, like, you know, by all means, we need to give Kidd his props, even though he's getting whooped right now. Kidd was really good at making adjustments in that second round. I do wonder if he'll just start Kleber this game as opposed to doing his Powell for 7 minutes and then barely playing him the rest of the game. But what are some moves you think that they might be able to make?
Yeah, I mean, firstly, to your point on Jason Kidd, we absolutely have to give him credit. Probably right up until this series, he's coached, you know, a really outstanding playoff run.
Yeah.
And I was one of the people, you know, maybe more so than anyone else, who was really skeptical and really negative on the Jason Kidd signing. You know, when he was last in the league, he was essentially the worst coach in the NBA. And Dallas brought him in. It wasn't a popular pick. It was controversial for on-court and off-court reasons, but they stuck with their guy, and he just outcoached the coach of the year in the previous series, and has done a really awesome job. But to, like, it's kind of weird, like, you know, doing their obituary when they're technically still in the playoffs, but it's really hard to see them coming up with any answers. And so what moves can they make? I think the first question is just, like, are they going to try to stick with the same style? You know, is this possibly the end of the heliocentric NBA offense of you've got this one awesome player and you've got role players that can defend and shoot threes? And then what happens when Reggie Bullock goes 0 for 10 and Maxi Kleber goes 0 for 5 and, you know, Trevor Ariza and, you know, PJ Tucker can't hit their threes? You know, is this going to be sort of the end of this, you know, an attempt to play this type of game?
It very well could be. I mean, just thinking about, we saw this fail in Houston with Harden. LeBron, to some degree, has always had a high amount of heliocentrism, but he's also always had other really high level talent around him. I think you can do a lot with a one man show if you build it all for that player. But I don't think it can ever quite do enough. We saw Jordan needing to embrace the triangle. We've seen other players kind of always learning that they needed a self-sacrifice. I've been on a weird 60s kick of basketball lately. And when Will won his first championship in Philadelphia,
yeah,
where did he rank in leading scorers on his team in the finals?
I'm just going to step on the rake that you just put down in front of me and say, of course he was the leading scorer on his team. He's Wilt Chamberlain.
That's what you would think, right? He's Wilt Chamberlain. Yeah. No, Wilt Chamberlain was fifth in points per game in the finals when he won that ring. Now, he did lead the team in assists and rebounds with 28 and a half rebounds a game. So, you know, there's still quite a bit, but he averaged 19 points per game. Hal Greer, 26, Chet Walker, 23, Wale Jones, 20, and Billy Cunningham, 19.7, which I just thought was outstanding to like realize that even Wilt, the physically greatest like one-man show, his talent versus the league, the year he finally wins is the year that he reigns it back.
Mm.
So I think you have to.
And like coming in, I mean, in the previous seasons, essentially what had ruined Dallas is like, okay, Luka was awesome. Sure, he's never made out of the first round until now, but he, you know, it definitely wasn't on him. He had some awesome playoff games, you know, had some great series despite losing. And Dallas had some good role players, you know, Dorian Finney-Smith and Maxi Kleber, who I've always been a big fan of. And so they sort of got those pieces. And essentially, what lost them series in previous seasons is that they just didn't have anyone except Luka who could really create anything. And they addressed that this year. Like, they've got two other guys on the team that can create offense for themselves and for others. Like, Jalen Brunson and had some awesome games against Phoenix. You know, there were times where he was, you know, almost their best player. And Spencer Dinwiddie, you know, he was pretty much the only guy that could make a shot in Dallas's last game. And so, like, they do have now... they've given Luka multiple other ball handlers who can create. And so it's like, what more can you really do? Like, you've got the role players, you've got the defenders. Reggie Bullock, I think, is like the unsung hero of this team. I think without his defense in like both of their previous series, like Chris Paul just couldn't do anything against him. The fact that he could get over screens and he's got like all this length to contest shots, like Chris Paul just couldn't do anything. And he defended Booker well at times too. But, you know, you go 0 for 10 in a game and it's like, you know, like what can you even do to address this?
During the broadcast of the game, they mentioned that he had gotten a cut and received like 5 stitches above his right eye, which, I mean, that is going to mess with your shooting. 100%.
That was when Steph headbutted him as he was getting double teamed.
You know what they say, no one wins with a headbutt, but it seems like Steph did win with this one.
I don't know, it might have been Bullock headbutting Steph as he was bringing the double team from behind.
Then Bullock lost.
Yep.
It's kind of wild to look at it, though. That Dorian Finney-Smith contract is such a good contract, like topping out at $15 million in 4 years.
Yeah.
Spencer Dinwiddie, $18 million for the next 2 years. You'd love to get something from Tim Hardaway Jr., as he is going to be the second highest paid Mav, possibly third. We don't know what that Brunson contract is going to look like. You got to imagine it's upwards of $20 million, though.
Yeah. I mean, it's got to be like in like the $100 million guaranteed range.
Yeah. I was kind of on the they should let him walk train before the playoffs, and I am just flat out wrong.
Yeah, I think I was right there with you, especially once they brought Dinwiddie in. It's like, well, okay, here's the guy to replace Brunson. You know, Brunson is an unrestricted free agent. He can go do whatever he wants. We can't guarantee that he's going to be back, so we've got his replacement. We've got another starting caliber point guard who can create offense, who has more positional size, so can probably hold up better defensively, especially if Luka can't get over a screen and we have to go to a switching system. Probably a better fit there. But yeah, like Brunson has looked like, you know, like an all-star caliber player at times in the playoffs, and certainly is a step above Spencer Dinwiddie, as much as I've always loved Spencer Dinwiddie.
Just judging by the playoffs, who is going to be the best? Bane, Brunson, Poole, or Maxi?
I mean, we can use this as a transition to the Warriors side. The shots that Jordan Poole was able to create at certain times, and like he was the best player on the Warriors in their first round series. Like Steph was coming off the bench, and Jordan Poole was you know, destroying his opponent. And just with his skill set, I think it's probably him. And that really brings up an interesting dilemma for Golden State going forward is, I mean, we just had the Andrew Wiggins game, and going into next season, like, there's going to have to be decisions. If I'm saying Jordan Poole is, you know, this all-star caliber player, and certainly he's played like it at times in this playoffs and has shown plenty of flashes before that, can you keep bringing him off the bench? And if not, then who does go to the bench? And, you know, Kuminga has shown signs of being really good, and Moses Moody had some, you know, good possessions defending Luka as the ball man when they went to their box in one. And so, like, you've got all these players, their roster is sort of set up to move on from Wiggins. Yeah. They've replaced him in numerous ways, but he goes out and has a game like this and just shows this guy can score, and he's defended Luka pretty much, I mean, better than anyone else that we've seen this series. Well, this year.
Good job.
Yeah. Like, he's a legitimately, you know, like, maybe he shouldn't have, well, he shouldn't have started in the All-Star game, but, like, we went through it. It was perfectly plausible that he should have been on the team.
Yeah.
And he's been even better in the playoffs than he has, than he was in the regular season when he was a, you know, reasonably deserving All-Star.
I think with Wiggins, he's just kind of a late bloomer. And it really always makes me kind of wonder, I forget who said it first, but it's been floated out a lot of times about, like, there's 10% of players that are always going to be successes, 10% of players that are always going to be failures. And then, like, that 80% is just, do they get to the right spot, the right coaching, the right nurturing?
Mm.
And like, sometimes guys just take a little bit. He doesn't have the, like, dog and the fight in him of a Jimmy Butler, but I kind of see him having that, like, later career development. So I've been thinking a lot about Butler. And where does he rank in NBA history? And, you know, I've been doing a lot of top 100 stuff and, you know, top 75 stuff. And like, Butler's name is legitimately never mentioned. But as it looks like he might lead his team to another finals, it's just, it kind of got me thinking about him. And I think Wiggins has some of that to him. This, a later development than what we thought he would be. I was 100% on the Wiggins should be an all-star. When you look at the NBA rules, if you have to have 5 front court players, there just wasn't any other front.
Yeah.
You know, just break down the 5 front court players, and Paul George, Anthony Davis, Draymond Green were all injured. So of healthy players, like, he 100% deserved to be there. But it's really great to see him have that 40-point night and just demolish Luka with that dunk. Luka, but it was a great moment. He definitely either needs to take a big pay cut or he's moving on.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be interesting too, because, like, the Warriors have pretty much always been, like, one of the most expensive teams in the league.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, they're about to get even more expensive once Jordan Poole gets paid, and they've got Wiggins making a whole bunch of money, and they've got Draymond and Steph and Clay, who's probably making too much money at this stage. They don't have a super wealthy ownership group. Like, their ownership has always been willing to pay up, which is a real testament to them, because, like, they don't have Steve Ballmer or Joe Tsai. Like, they don't have, you know, one of these super ridiculous billionaires. They do make a lot of money, like, as just revenue as a team. So maybe that offsets it. But, like, sorry to, you know, pick on your Lakers again, but, like,
yeah,
you know, you'd imagine the Lakers are making a whole bunch of revenue. They have been for multiple years and haven't paid the tax in a long time. Sometimes the difference between a championship team and a playoff team is just, like, how much is ownership willing to pay for the, you know, the improvements around the margins. And at what point, you know, if we look at those Houston Rockets teams that we just talked about, you know, they were giving up assets to save money because their owner wouldn't pay too much luxury tax. And it'll be interesting to see whether they are willing to go even more expensive or whether, like, there is a limit.
There's definitely, like, a niche Gen Z, the limit is the floor or something thing that I can't figure out. My brain has been broken today.
Ceiling is the roof, Nate.
The ceiling is the roof. Thank you. At work today, a coworker asked me something and I told them, and they did it, and it ended up backfiring horribly on them.
Yeah.
They're like, I don't trust you anymore. And the only thing I could think of was 303s, don't trust a hoe. So I, like, kept that in. Like, I broke out laughing and just walked away. It's like, man. I'm so sorry about that.
Doubly exposing yourself on the world stage, Nate.
Yeah, we have good global reach, so but
just like getting back to Wiggins, like one thing that's made me think about his development since getting to the Warriors, where he always had like good numbers and was never a good player, and then he gets to the Warriors, and it's the sort of unique system where, you know, everyone gets opportunities, but he's not being asked to do too much. He's not a focal point,
mm-hmm.
you know, on a game to game basis. But the thing about the Warriors is, like, you will always get opportunities to make plays. Like, you know, there's not a lot of sacrifice that's going on, even though you're playing with these, you know, generational offensive players. Like, we saw that when Kevin Durant got there, and everyone's like, okay, who's gonna sacrifice? Like, Clay's gonna have to take fewer shots, and he like took the exact same amount of shots. Yeah. You know, like, there are always opportunities.
I remember they asked Clay about, you know, who's gonna sacrifice. He's like, not me. Like, I'm not changing what I do.
Yeah, exactly. And then he took the exact same amount of shots with Durant as he did before Durant.
It's amazing. Someone we didn't touch on who's had a really good playoffs recently is Kevon Looney, who is an upcoming free agent.
Mm.
And they opened the broadcast with kind of talking about how much is he going to get paid. Apparently, Kerr said to him in the huddle, or said to him post-game, to like, hey, I hope you get paid $20 million this offseason. I hope it's by us. And I think that is an insane number. Insane. Outrageous. I don't know. It's a crazy number.
Yeah. It's so crazy. It's got you making up words.
Yeah. It's outsane.
It is absolutely loony.
Oh, God. Get the fuck out of here. but you know, he's going to get some money, and they're already at $170 million, and they're at a $52 million luxury tax payment, and that's before any sort of the repeater tax, whatnot, that comes into play. So, they're going to be paying a shit ton of money to keep this team together. And I don't know. They're kind of my title. I mean, they are my title favorites right now.
Yeah.
I'm really mad at myself for the bracket challenge where I knocked them out in the first round because I was like, yeah, if Curry's not healthy, they're going to lose.
Yeah.
And then I was like, nope, Curry's fine. We just rested him. We're now a juggernaut. We're going to win the title.
Yeah. We don't even need Steph Curry. We've got All-NBA Jordan Poole.
Okay. If they just played Poole, Moody, Kuminga, Wiggins, and Looney.
Hmm.
So, you know, they... No Clay, no Draymond, no Curry. Are they better than the Kings?
I mean, probably. I think sort of the more interesting question, though, is like, how good, if they can keep those guys together, are the Warriors just like, could they be title contenders again in like 6 years? Curry, Draymond, Clay are gone, and they've still got these awesome players. And they've got this great coaching staff that can, you know, turn... you know, negative value into
it gets
40-point two-way players.
It gets really hard to do. I mean, just remembering the Spurs who did it for 20 years, and then they had a pretty good transition plan lined up with Kawhi and LaMarcus Aldridge. And they really, I think the off-the-court stuff more than the actual on-the-court play is what held them back. There was definitely some butting of heads. You got Tony going to Charlotte for his final year. You know, Manu kind of retires a little bit before he needs to.
Yeah.
Timmy tries to hold it together. And I just, as bright of a future as Golden State has, I do kind of worry that dark times could come. You know, is Draymond willing to take a pay cut on his next deal, or is he going to go somewhere else? Is Clay's contract just this albatross now with two more years and getting up to $40 million? Does Curry kind of languish his last couple of years as he waits for the Kamingas and Pools to hit this ascension level? It looks really bright, but if history is any indicator, there's a lot to worry about.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like this, like there've been other examples of this sort of thing where you've got high level teams with young players, and like as you say, it almost never comes to fruition.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the biggest reasons for that is just like you've got to pay these guys at some point.
Yeah.
As we just said, like this is an ownership group that's willing to pay a lot of money, and so if they've got the opportunity to be like, okay, we're contenders right now. We're going to be the most expensive team in NBA history, but we get to retain these players that will keep us in contention for another decade. And, you know, you get this absolutely absurd run of even more, you know, insane than the Spurs of just like 20 years of just contention.
Yeah. I feel like we've talked a lot about the Western Conference. And I feel equally bored as you with the Eastern Conference, and just not quite as excited about what the potential could be. But we should probably touch on them and for at least a minute. Where do you stand on the Tatum versus Butler debate? Who is the best player in this series?
That's actually a really good question. I mean, like in the abstract, those are two guys that are sort of like around, I think, a similar level of player, you know, like sort of that late top 10 kind of level. I think like overall, you know, like Jimmy Butler kind of has been the better player in this series. Jason Tatum is still so young.
Are you still 19?
Yeah, exactly. Players his age, we don't normally hold to the standard of being a top 10 player. But I think he hasn't really been that in certain games. And certainly like his propensity to just like disappear or just totally fall off for a half or for a game or for a quarter is, you know, sort of concerning. But interestingly, like Jimmy Butler had that same sort of thing early in his career. I mean, it wasn't that early because he was such a late bloomer, but once he became a star, like he's had some really bad playoff series. And he's had some really awesome playoff series, like the, you know, bubble finals, where, you know, maybe he would have been an NBA championship with a little bit more health, would have been an NBA champion.
I will say, the Heat having a chance to make the finals this year, and as we're recording this, Woj just tweeted out that Marcus Smart is not going to play. So, I don't know, do with that information what you will. There's no hero, there's no Smart. But it does make me feel better as a Lakers fan that if the Heat can get back to the finals, then I feel like our Mickey Mouse ring is a little bit more more solidified.
yeah, for sure.
Makes me feel like we're not quite as far away.
Yeah, this series is another one. And just like PJ Tucker is an underrated player.
Yeah.
You know, just another notch in that column.
And another notch in ownership being willing to pay to maintain championships. Milwaukee.
Exactly. Like, if... Exactly. I mean, he says apparently that they said, oh, go out and get an offer and then we'll match it. Like, just pay the dude.
Yeah.
And part of the reason that they may not have been willing to do that is because they decided that they need to, like, give Bobby Portis a bunch of money. And, he's a really good regular season player. But if my decision is, like, Bobby Portis or PJ Tucker and I'm trying to win an NBA championship, I think if the Bucks had PJ Tucker, like, they probably win that series. And the way that he's been able to just like mess with Jason Tatum, just like by sheer physicality, like, you know, he's just bullying this dude up and down the court. Like for a guy his age to be able to, you know, he's one of the oldest players in the NBA. And for him to like be able to take out this young superstar just with like physicality and like, there aren't really, I mean, he may be one of the best players in the league at the sort of combination of being able to get over a screen and also be physical enough to, you know, not get bullied on the ball. You know, like there's like Marcus Smart, there's Jrue Holiday. And then there like aren't too many other guys. Like normally it's the bigger guys that you use the screen because they're sort of too big to work their way through. But he's just so relentless that he just fights over everything, stays in front of anyone. He's still one of the best big wing defenders. He's having a massive impact on this game, on the series.
I was just pulling it up. He's getting paid $7 million. Bobby Portis is about $5 million. Serge Ibaka is $9 million. Grayson Allen, who they traded for and then offered an extension to, is going to make $9 million next year. There's just not a great answer to why they didn't want to pay him. Tucker does one of my favorite things, which is when you put a non... just a bad defender on him, he's like, cool, I'm gonna beat this guy up on the offensive boards.
Exactly. Against Trae Young in the Hawks series, they're like, okay, where can we put Trae Young? PJ Tucker, all he's gonna do is shoot. He's like, no, I was gonna run through this guy and get every single offensive rebound because he's not gonna fucking stop me.
He did it all last season and in the playoffs, you know, when they played the Hawks, so Trae Young again, but also like when the Suns wanted to rest Chris Paul and they're like, we're going to stick you on this guy. He just pummeled him.
Yeah. And like that's something that he developed. I mean, like in Houston, he would literally just stand in the corner. And you know, certainly that was probably part of their scheme. I'm not saying that, you know, him, you know, maybe, you know, I'm sure he wanted to be more involved. But like he's become just like a much more active off-ball player. Like he's still got the ability to catch and shoot, and that's really what makes him valuable. What differentiates him from, you know, being a guy like, I don't know, like Matisse Thybulle, who you really want to have on the court for defense, but you just cannot afford him because he's so bad offensively. You know, the shooting is still the thing that makes the difference. But, you know, the way that he now, like, you know, does simple things like just cuts to the basket, you know, like that easy, just like run towards the hoop and your guy's got to track you and there's movement and it changes the spacing and goes for those offensive rebounds. And, you know, he sets really good screens and he does really well out of screens either. You know, he likes to do the quick cut to the hoop out of pick and roll, or you know, he can pop to a degree. You know, it's just the ways that you can impact the game and you can develop as an offensive player, even as a dependent offensive player who's not going to have the ball in your hands.
It really just goes to show, you know, when players are given more opportunity to develop, or when players take the opportunity, because it's not like they're not there. We've got the EuroLeague, we've got a lot of other leagues where players can go that route. You get some really great results. I was thinking about NBA eras lately and why I consider the 80s to be such a strong era is in part because you had the 70s where you have the ABA split, and so many more players are playing. And when they merge, they condense down, and so many players get cut. But you had those previous years where more players get more reps and more opportunities to grow. And so guys like PJ Tucker kind of get to rise up and get, instead of just getting cut, and maybe they go to Europe, maybe they don't. You just had this awesome opportunity. I'm super excited for the G League to continue to develop, because I think like 4 or 5 years, we're gonna just see guys get snagged up from G League rosters like right and left, and come in and have huge impacts on the game.
Yeah, and speaking of that, you know, you look at two guys on the Heat who have come from the G League and are having massive impacts, and Max Strus, who, you know, I've got the receipts of being a fan of Max Strus, and Gabe Vincent. Like both of those guys, put it this way: if you were to say, you know, you've got a contending team and their starting shooting guard is literally unplayable, like you cannot put him on the floor, like you just imagine, like, okay, well, they just lost one of their best 5 or 6 players. That is a massive detriment to the team. Like, how do you come back from that? And like Max Strus just stepped in out of nowhere, you know, after being a G League player and being cut by multiple NBA teams, and has just come in. And the dude is not afraid to make buckets. Like, he's not afraid to shoot. And I have to think that like part of that is from being in the G League, you know, like to not be afraid of that. Like, you've got to have this, you know, almost this ego of like, I'm a bad motherfucker. And you can't really develop that, I think, to a degree, as like always being a role player, where like, okay, now it's like, okay, well, go stay out of the way. You know, like you get that from making those shots, which you do by being in the G League, where you are more of a focus. And, you know, you see it in Strus and Gabe Vincent and Jordan Poole, these guys who have had opportunities to really, you know, develop as players, to the point where they're not just being told to stay out of the way.
It's a fine line of being so confident that you're going to do well and be good, and also having that like desire and drive to keep working and like embrace doing all of the dirty stuff and little stuff. Because like, you know, a lot of players are always told that they're great and can do everything, and then they get their ass handed to them when they start playing tougher competition, you know, whether that be in college or whether that being, you know, your first year in the pros where you're not used to, like, I mean, most college players aren't the best player on their team when they, I mean, most pros are the best player on their college.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much every NBA player went like the first probably 18 years of their life being the best basketball player that they personally know.
Yeah, I remember when I was 12 and I found out that people were so much better at this sport than I was like, shit, I wasn't
Yeah.
prepared for that.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, like most of these guys go through high school as being, you know, maybe it's probably different now as we get into more like AAU stuff where, and these, you know, academies type things, which I guess has been going on for a little while, but
But still, you might know one or two guys.
yeah. you know, PJ Tucker, for example, like he's been a finals MVP, like certainly not in the NBA, but the guy has, you know, two foreign league finals MVPs. This guy has gone his entire life while not being the best player. Like, and certainly a lot of time he has been the best player on his team. And so to have that sort of confidence and then come in and have that sort of dog, I think is a beneficial thing.
Yeah.
Which you can get from being in the EuroLeague and being in the G League.
Guys going to Europe, and we already mentioned Bobby Portis. Shout out to Nikola Mirotic, EuroLeague MVP this season.
For real.
Yeah.
Bobby Portis is arch nemesis.
The people's champion versus the Euro guy. We should set up a boxing match for them. You know how there's you know that wave of like, hey, NBA players are going to get into boxing, like Deron Williams, Lamar Odom. That is the match that I would pay money to see. Pay-per-view, you can have my $20. I'll pay for it.
Can you imagine the insurance payments that they would have to cover to have a $5 million guy? And Mirotic probably makes more than that in the EuroLeague. I'll see if I can find his salary real quick.
I was thinking you do it after their careers, you know, maybe let it die down for a couple seasons.
Yeah. So Mirotic makes $15 million a year playing in the EuroLeague.
I'm surprised that the EuroLeague doesn't snag more of like that level talent.
No, that's not correct. That's the contract that he turned down.
Oh.
It's confusing because it's in foreign currency. Anyway, he makes a lot of money.
Yeah, I'm seeing between like 3.9 and 5.2 euro. So, yeah. It's a decent amount.
Oh, looks like euro and US dollars are pretty comparable. So he's probably making like around 5 million US.
Yeah. Oh, so him and Bobby Portis are the same player, or same pay rate. Yeah,
it's fitting.
Just one is EuroLeague MVP and one is starting to enjoy his summer. I'm really sad the Bucks are out. I don't know. Mm. I do feel like they would add more excitement to the playoffs, but I think there's some really good things that can come out of this Eastern Conference Finals. I know we've been a little bit down, but I think if Jimmy Butler gets through it, he's got another finals on his resume. I think that probably moves him into top 100 consideration. You know, not too many players lead their team to multiple finals, win or lose. Definitely borderline gets him there. Mm-hmm. And if Tatum gets him there, Tatum gets to join a really strong young group of guys that have led their team to a finals. And it just gives me another reason to shit on Kyrie for leaving Boston and Boston being so much better than anything Kyrie's done post LeBron. But I did want to ask, with Tatum and his kind of ascendance as a passer and defender, and I do think his overall team construction being better, who do you think has a better next decade, him or Luka, taking into consideration, you know, their teams and their outlook for the future?
That's actually a really interesting question. I mean, like, at first thought, you're like, okay, well, Luka is so much better, or, you know, in a different tier at least. You know, mm-hmm. like if you sort of, you know, ranking the top players in the NBA, like Luka's probably like in that top five tier, and Tatum's probably in like the, I don't know, like 8 to 15 kind of range. But yeah, certainly as he continues to develop as a playmaker, there was this notion that like Luka was, you know, had become an awesome defender. and certainly he held up, you know, early in the Suns series, they just ran everything through him and got really good results. Late in the series, he held up perfectly well and they couldn't really do anything with him. You know, they couldn't exploit him. But like the Warriors have just gone back to just like, oh, Luke is involved in this play. It's a bucket. And like they're, you know, when they involve Luka, they're going to double teams, and like he's just sort of like so bad defensively that there was one moment where they tried to double Steph because Steph had, you know, was involved in an action that left mm-hmm. Doncic defending him, and so they brought the double, and like Steph just like, you know, just drove right past him because he's so bad that like he can't even defend in a double team. Jason Tatum is maybe a little bit overrated as an on-ball guy. You know, like he's not necessarily a great on-ball stopper,
mm-hmm.
which is not to say he's a bad on-ball player. He's definitely a good on-ball player, but he is really awesome as a team defender and is really versatile. And so you sort of look at that side of the ball and combine with, you know, what you were just saying about roster construction. And, you know, earlier this very podcast, we were just talking about how do you go forward with this type of basketball that Luka Doncic plays? And how can the Mavs improve on this team where they've, you know, to me it feels like they've done everything that they possibly can to, you know, maximize this type of team, and it hasn't really worked out. And so for sure, those are probably the two guys that you sort of look to as, you know, sort of going forward are going to be the ones that are going to be competing for championships and possibly MVPs.
Well, yeah, I know they're the two guys. That's why I asked the question. I prepare. Yeah. I do some cursory research.
Did you know that both of those guys are pretty good?
But who's going to be better? That's what the listeners come for.
Put it this way. I think Luka is probably going to have more individual success, but if I had to guess, I think Tatum will have more team success. I think Luka for sure gets an MVP first, and I think Tatum's more likely to get a championship.
Interesting. I don't know what's going to happen with the MVP in the future. This year seemed to be a bit of a reckoning on the advanced stats of it all. And I remember kind of going through the Steve Nash era where best player on best team kind of had its backlash. And so I'm interested to see, you know, do we want to give it to Luka because he has an amazing individual season next year, or do we give it to Tatum because Boston is in first place in the East next season, which I think is a potential realistic possibility that they win the East regular season wise next season.
You don't think it's likely that Dallas can win the West?
No, I don't think they have enough surrounding talent to win. I don't think they need to push themselves. I don't think that's a good strategy.
I don't think they necessarily need to push themselves. I mean, just by virtue of being a really good team with one of the best players in the NBA, and you look at sort of the teams that finished above them, where Utah is, you know, or some of the teams around them, you know, Utah's probably going a different direction. Phoenix, they can't possibly just run this back and hope that, you know, do the same thing and hope for a different result. So you could see changes there as well.
But hear me out. They can.
And they were like, this was, you know, we sort of move on really quickly as sports fans, but like when that series ended, there was talk that this was like one of the most embarrassing series losses in like decades. So surely, you know, if you're James Jones and the Phoenix Suns, like you can't just look at this and be like, okay, that was one of the most embarrassing and, you know, sort of surprisingly poor playoff series, you know, the modern era. Let's do the exact same thing and hope that it's different. Like, there's no way that they just run it back.
They need to make a few changes. I think they really need to repair the relationship with DeAndre Ayton, just in part because if you're going to move him, his value is so low right now. I've been trying to figure out a way for the Pistons to be a title contender next season, and I think I've almost got there.
Yeah, that's a big jump, but okay.
Well, it involves you needing to talk New Orleans into trading you Zion.
Mm.
It worked out a lot better in my mind if they had stayed at 3 in the lottery.
Yeah.
But something involving 5 and Grant for Zion, you know, probably other future picks, probably Killian Hayes. So you just got to keep Sadiq and Cunningham. And I was trying to figure out, because they've been linked to Ayton a lot.
Yeah.
Like, could they just pull a Malcolm Brogdon and say, hey, Phoenix, we're going to offer your guy the max. We'd like you not to match it. So we'll offer you a sign-in trade so that way you can technically get something for him.
Yeah.
And like, save face. And it's going to be like, you know, some minor picks package. And here's Isaiah Stewart. And then, boom, Pistons have a Cunningham, Bay, Ayton, Zion lineup of death. I don't think this is entirely realistic. I've just been trying to figure out how to watch exciting basketball.
I think Ayton to the Pistons is perfectly realistic. Like, you know, he's one of the 10 best players in the league at his position. If you factor in offense and defense, he's probably like a top 5 two-way center. And, you know, Isaiah Stewart's a good player, but DeAndre Ayton is a totally different tier. And DeAndre Ayton, like, could do more as well. Like, his points totals are down. Since, you know, sort of Chris Paul arrived, like he can be your, you know, a number 2 scorer or like, you know, number 1 if you're not that good of a team, and would play really well with Cade. I think your point of, right, we'll give you picks so that you don't match, Like, that's the only way that I see Aiden leaving. I think if you're the Suns, like, you just match, you know, you probably don't want to match any contract, but you probably do just to maintain the asset.
Mm-hmm.
So the only way that if I'm the Suns, I'm letting DeAndre Aiden go is four picks that I can then use to, you know, rebuild this team and maybe, you know, bring in more wings.
I mean, maybe just do the Grant for Aiden swap and call that semi-good. I just, aside from him going to the Pistons, I think Phoenix at least gets some comparable level of talent or some talent that they can make appear comparable. Like, we saw JaVale McGee look like JaVale looked super good. Bismack Biyombo went from not in the league to looking like a starting quality big man.
Yeah.
And all this is to say, like, I also don't see Utah going the full blow it up route. Zach Lowe mentioned hey, what if you just swap Ayton for Gobert? How does that work out for both teams? Mm-hmm. There's going to be a lot of regular season wins coming out of the West again next season. You've supposedly got a healthy Denver. Golden State will now have Klay healthy, probably Curry healthy for more games than what he missed this past year. There's a good chance that Dallas regresses next season in the wins column without necessarily regressing on the floor.
Yeah, no, you do make a good point about like the return of some of these Western Conference teams. Like, sure, I don't expect Utah to be as good next year. I think Gobert is gone, and he's a massive driver of regular season wins for them, so I wouldn't expect them to be in that range. But like, would it be surprising if Denver, with Jamal Murray back, with MVP Nikola Jokic, some improvements around the margins, anything out of Michael Porter, like, would it be that surprising if they're the one seed next year?
No.
I mean, it wouldn't be crazy. If the Clippers can get, you know, 70 games out of Paul George and Kawhi, would it be ridiculous to think that, you know, that team with those two high-end players and, you know, probably the best depth in the NBA could be the one seed? I don't think so. Yeah, that's a very valid point.
If Westbrook just turns back the clock and starts looking like 2016, no. Kidding. But,
you get Malcolm Brogdon for Russell Westbrook and Anthony Davis doesn't suck next year and is playing, you know, like 2 years ago, Anthony Davis and LeBron can hold up for another season. You know, Kendrick Nunn plays. Kendrick Nunn was like a starting caliber, you know, like a lower end starting caliber point guard a couple seasons back. You can use the taxpayer mid-level, bring in hopefully someone that can play basketball.
I'm going to need a hell of a lot longer pause between you saying, sure, you can get Malcolm Brogdon for Westbrook and Anthony Davis. you got to put a pause in there. You can get it for Westbrook. Pause. Anthony Davis also could be better.
Yeah. So, sorry to give you a heart attack there.
I am not trading both of them. I'm not that desperate to get rid of Westbrook that I'm willing to move off of Davis, because that's just waving the white flag right there.
You get a little Duarte action in there, no?
Oh my god. No.
Save a bit of luxury tax.
At this point, if you do that, you might as well sell the franchise. That's where they're at. Like, you've mortgaged everything else. You can't choose to be cheap now. Well, with only four teams left, there's not quite as much things to talk about in the NBA. Do you have anything else or any kind of closing thoughts?
Oh, there was one funny comment from Ime Udoka that I wanted to touch on as we talk about, you know, Jason Tatum being destroyed by PJ Tucker.
Yeah.
He said that they, something to the effect of, you know, they just need to play tougher, you know, that they were too soft. And you sort of look at the roster and it's like, okay, is Marcus Smart soft? Like, I don't think so. I think he plays pretty hard. Like, is Al Horford soft? Not really, no. Grant Williams, you know, he plays really hard. And you sort of go down the list, it's like, who could this guy be talking about? And so, you know, I sort of see that as coach calling out Jason Tatum. And we'll see how he responds. And another random thought that I had as, you know, the Celtics had 16,842 turnovers. I don't know if you saw the box score. That's apt to say that he has two left hands.
Hey, maybe they can flip him. I think there's some potential there. It's Brown's from Atlanta.
At least like 40 and 20. Maybe like 40, 20, 10.
22.
Okay.
32. And
okay.
10.
Okay.
On 55% shooting from the field.
Not too bad. Did he lead his team in scoring that series?
No, he's still behind Hal Greer. But 22, 32, and 10.
Yeah.
I just love looking at these numbers sometimes because, like, the pace was just so insane that, you know, both teams got 70 rebounds a game or 65 or something.
Yeah. That's what Giannis has against me whenever I play on 2K.
I thought you were going to say that's what Giannis could do against you if you played him in person.
No. He'd have a lot more than 22 points. Unless he had like 11 shooting positions. But yeah, like my dudes can't box out Giannis in 2K. He gets every single rebound. That's what his box line looks like.
I feel like if I played Giannis in person, I would just try to take a couple of charges. I feel like I'd take some very convincing charges, you know.
Except like he moves so far to the side, like you try to take a charge and then he'd be like 10 feet to your right and he'd be like, oh, shit. True. And then he's at the hoop.
I'm not broad. Well, listeners, let us know what would happen if you played Giannis. How bad is that going for you? Find us on TikTok, Twitter, Facebook. Hope you enjoyed the show.